Welcome to And That's the Game Podcast. Presented by Pro Batter Sports. And That's the Game is hosted by Wayne Mazzoni. Today's special guest is Zach Short.
Welcome to And That's the Game Podcast, sponsored by Pro Batter Sports. I'm your host, Wayne Mazzoni. And on today's episode, our guest is Zach Short, Major League infielder with the Detroit Tigers. And we covered a lot of stuff on this podcast that you really enjoy, from Zach as a young athlete, you know, in his pre-high school years and the sports he played, as well as his experience through high school and having two brothers that also played Division I baseball, to his time as a player at Sacred Heart and even in the Cape Cod League, and then all through the minors, and his experience as a big league athlete, and also his offseason work that he does. And we even touched a little bit on his podcast that started since COVID called The Compound. So I hope you enjoy this episode with Major League Baseball player Zach Short. Awesome. So we're here with Zach Short, a longtime friend, Major League infielder with the Detroit Tigers, which we'll get to in a little bit. The scope of this podcast really is for coaches and kids listening to kind of learn a little bit about the development aspect of baseball, softball, et cetera. So if you could, if you can remember, what was sort of the 5-year-old to 10-year-old, you know, the young athlete Zach Short like?
I was as competitive as they come back then. You know, I still have it, obviously, but I mean, no matter what I was doing, I was trying to beat you. I was trying to, you know, embarrass you, kind of per se, but it was tough for me to do, being, you know, 100 pounds basically up until high school. But it was always something where, you know, I kind of regret, I don't even say kind of, I definitely regret not taking the strength aspect as seriously as possible. I was always, you know, like I said, competitive. So my extra work always went into the sport that I was playing. So, you know, I mean, in high school, like my dad, the only kind of free time we had was before school. So like we would wake up at 6 a.m. and go hit, because that was the only time extra that we could hit. So that was my way of getting extra swings in. And then when I was playing basketball, it was, you know, going right after school before practice to shoot, maybe after practice going somewhere to shoot. But I would say my biggest regret is not getting into the strength aspect of it, because I was working my ass off as much as I could in the sport aspect. And that was kind of where I put all of my attention, was looking for a way to get extra work in. Because again, I knew even back then I was a little naive, but I knew I was undersized. You know, nobody's going to look at this guy, you know, like I said, 5 feet, nothing, and 100 pounds. Like, all right, I'm scared of this kid. But it was like, hey, I'm going to outwork you, and I'm going to outcompete you in whatever we are doing.
Now, you know, at that age, let's take really before high school, what sports were going on in your life, you know, before you got to high school?
The three major sports, like I loved basketball, I loved baseball, obviously, and I loved football, even though, you know, I wouldn't say I loved it. I loved playing the game. I hated practice. But I mean, I was legitimately any sport, like whatever season I was in, that was my favorite sport. So like, again, if it was football season, I tried to love it as much as I could. But again, you know, getting hit at my size wasn't the most fun thing to do. But again, yeah, I mean, I was playing all three sports. I put a lot of time and effort into each one, even if I didn't, you know, love it as much as the other. But yeah, I mean, I was playing football, I was playing basketball, and I was playing baseball. And golf, I mean, golf, you know, not as much into it as I am now. But I mean, I was still, you know, if I had free time, my friends wanted to play, it's like, yeah, let's go do it.
And at a younger age, in all those sports, including golf, were you, could you tell you were better than the rest? Was it just baseball? Did you stand out in basketball? Did you stand out in football?
I stood out in aspects of it. Like, again, I could always shoot in basketball. So like, I kind of knew that was my calling card. Again, I'm not going to jump over anybody. And our point guard in high school ended up playing overseas. So I kind of saw that where I was like, hey, if you want to play, you're going to have to figure out something else. So again, I put all of my time and effort into shooting, learning how to, you know, to really become a 3-point threat. And then in football, I was a quarterback. And it was kind of just, again, doing the littler, the smaller things throughout a game or throughout a practice to kind of get an advantage. You know, it was just, again, it was really tough for me to stand out on any field given my size and strength.
Okay. Now, obviously, you know, the people listening, watching won't know this, but I know you have two brothers and the three of you all played Division I baseball. So what do you think was going on in the Short household that produced 3D1 kids, which is extremely rare?
Yeah. I mean, there was a lot of ball talk going on, which we were very fortunate about, you know, and again, we had to have two, you know, loving, supportive parents who, you know, took us to every practice, made sure as much as they could to keep us in, you know, doing the extra work in school too, which I didn't love at the time. But again, looking back, I wish that I took that much more seriously. Yeah, I mean, it was always trying, again, I not to put myself on a pedestal to my brothers, but like, I was kind of the standard growing up. So like, they got to follow my footsteps where they saw me going to hit with my dad at 6 a.m. while we were getting ready for school. They saw me doing all the extra stuff. So they kind of, and it pisses me off that they don't lean on me more, you know, like they kind of want to write their own, which is absolutely great. And I totally understand. I'm not in their shoes, but I want them to ask me all of the questions in the world. I want them to kind of see what I did and then either follow those footsteps or say, hey, you know, I'm going to go a different way and I'm going to work harder than you, or hey, I'm going to get stronger than you, which again, that was something that I was very happy about them, was they took the weight room, they took the grades way more seriously than I did. And I didn't express that as much as I should have, honestly. And I think they kind of took the hint, like, okay, you know, he got to where he was doing this, like, let's do that plus some. So Right. Again, you know, even again, my parents, like my mom would always joke, like, I mean, joking also has a little bit of truth to it. Like, you know, if we slept in, again, it wasn't a military household, don't get me wrong, but you know, if we slept in and we didn't want to go work out, or if we didn't want to do extra things, it was like, oh, like, you think your competition's kind of just sitting there on the couch, you know? Like we weren't, you know, allowed to play video games during the week. We only played on weekends. And again, I have zero kind of love for video games. I can't sit there more than 30 minutes and play a game. So I think, again, looking back, like, that was always huge. And I hated it at the time. I hated that I couldn't do what my friends were doing, you know, staying up till 2 a.m. on a school night, you know, playing video games with each other. But in the end, I think that was like the biggest like aha moment when I got to college, or when I got to wherever, like, oh, wow, like, I was doing that way differently than you guys.
Right. No, that's a great point. How about in terms of high school baseball? What do you remember about your high school baseball experience, your travel to, you know, maybe let us know what you did for travel, kind of talk about your high school and, you know, pre-college baseball experience.
I played kind of everything that the kids were doing, that the kids are doing now. Like, I played travel. I played a little bit of Legion. But, you know, when I got to like the 16, 17 age group, you know, our travel team that we all grew up with was kind of folding. And, you know, we weren't playing in those tournaments that, you know, your local tournaments that, you know, four teams are in, where it's like, oh, let's go win this. You know, there's, again, I see what's going on with the travel now, and there are some teams that are just, you know, stealing absolute money, time, everything from people. But there was a time where, again, I credit my dad so much. He kind of was like, hey, how serious are you taking baseball? Because if you're going to do it, like, we're going to have to venture off a little bit from your friends and kind of find the next step travel team. And that's what it was. Like, it was, you know, we played with some kids towards the city, but we played on Taconic Rangers, all those kids down that, you know, Poughkeepsie, towards that area. It was just like, again, that's a huge pond of bigger fish. And to kind of, it was, you know, like a self audit at that time of like, all right, where do you stand with these kids? And, you know, I still stuck out in a sense where, you know, again, I had the ability to play Division One, but I mean, in high school, I played shortstop my junior year. We ended up winning states, but if there's a record, I set the record for most errors in New York State history. I was a liability at shortstop. And like, I think I won first team like designated hitter for my local paper, like, which is like a even more so saying like this guy was a legit liability at shortstop. So again, like going into my senior year, I was committed to Sacred Heart, played Division One infield. I got bumped to play second base because I was so, you know, bad at shortstop. And to where I am now, like, my calling card is basically my glove for the most part. Like, I wish that people could see what I went through, you know, mentally, physically, all of that on the field. Like, I had to completely, I mean, I credit YouTube, I credit watching games. Like, that's what I was doing in my free time, like in the fall of freshman year of high school or college, like coming off of my senior year of high school. Like, I needed to make some changes, and that was like, if I didn't, I would have just been, you know, trying to find a job. Like, I don't want to say a job, but like, it's kind of unheard of for a high schooler to be like, hey man, you're going to have to figure out how to play the infield position if you want to do anything, you know? And that's kind of where I was from high school to college, was like, hey, you need to figure something out here, or you're just going to have, it's going to be a long 3 to 4 years.
It's kind of funny because, I mean, since I've known you, your glove has been pretty elite. I'm wondering if your high school field was crappy and had a lot of bad bounces.
No. It was like a running joke. Like, hey, we can't park behind the first base dugout because Zach's going to hit us with one of his throws.
Ah, got it. Right.
Like, I mean, it was like, if I went a game without an error, it was like, wow, that was awesome. And if I went with, or if I went in a game with, or if I left a game with one error, it was like, oh, all right, not terrible. You know, it was just like everything. Like, I didn't know what I was doing. I thought I did. Like, I'll never forget the first practice we had of me playing shortstop. We were in, you know, like, all right, let's do turn double plays. And I was like, oh, I know where I stand on a double play. Like, it's easy. And it was like where you stand for like a left-handed shift as a shortstop. Like, I was up the middle, and my high school coach is like, what are you doing? And it was like, I thought I had it all figured out. I was like, oh, I'm going to play shortstop, I'm going to do this. And it's like, again, that was another like self-audit, like, hey man, you got to start learning how to play the game, or you're going to be, you know, just somebody else.
So, you know, as you're talking about, you're kind of struggling, but then you mentioned, obviously, now you get committed to Sacred Heart. So how did that jive? How did the recruiting process go that, you know, that landed you at Sacred Heart?
It was a long road. You know, again, I was, to put it into terms, like, I was 5'9", 143 pounds, I believe, freshman year of Sacred Heart weigh-in day. So, like, first day on campus, I'm less than 150 pounds. So you can imagine what it was 2 years prior when I was trying to get committed. So, again, back to the grades part, that was, like, my biggest regret outside, you know, baseball, weight room stuff. Like, I had to shut the door on multiple schools. Like, you know, Northeastern wanted me to come in for an official visit, and I was like, coach, like, listen, I don't want to waste your time. I don't want to waste my time. Like, if I get in, I'm not staying in. Like, you can take a look at my, you know, my resume. Sent it to him, never heard back. And that was kind of the theme. Like, dude, like, and it wasn't even like terrible grades, but if I just put myself a little bit of effort into that, like, who knows? Again, I love Sacred Heart more than anybody, but like, if who knows what could have happened? So the recruiting process was tough. A, being undersized, B, shooting myself in the foot with my grades, like, that's pretty slim picking. I had one offer out of high school, and it was Sacred Heart, which I was over the moon about, still am over the moon about. Like, again, really slim pickings for college. And when I thought that I was much better than I was, which again was probably a blessing in disguise, you know, that confidence can take you anywhere. But being real, you're undersized, you don't hit for power much at all, and your grades aren't great. Like, that's a tough recipe to get recruited.
Yeah, I mean, certainly it's obvious, but I always tell people, obvious, the better your grades are, the more options you have. And then, of course, depending on the school, the more financial aid you're going to get, you know, academic grants, it makes it more affordable. And then if you add in baseball money, so, you know, there's no question about it. So it's, you know, certainly good advice. Talk a bit about, you know, your evolution at Sacred Heart in terms of, you know, you came in undersized, but you left getting drafted. So what was your experience on the field? Obviously, I was coaching there at the time, so I've got to see your journey too. But strength wise, you know, talk a little bit about your experience there.
Yeah, so we were our team in a position, I think, you know, the shortstop before me, John Murphy, got drafted. So that opened up a spot. And then the second baseman transferred as well. So me and a few others came in with second base and shortstop basically wide open, which was a very fortunate situation for me. It was just a matter of, are you going to play shortstop or are you going to play second? So again, you can attest, I kind of had one thing on my mind in college, and it was to leave there playing professional baseball. So, you know, you could see it as soon as I walked in there. You know, school, as bad as it to say, was kind of, you know, it took a back seat. And it almost, you know, bit me for it as well. But, you know, walking onto campus that first day was, you know, it was, okay, if I'm going to do this again, if my goal is to play professional baseball, I'm going to have to, you know, I don't want to say lose some friends, but like, it's hard. College is, you get one shot at it. And again, I went in there and saying, hey, I am going to be the shortstop, you know, and there was a competition between Ted and I, and it was like Coach G would want to switch us back and forth. And after like three reps of me being at second base, I was like, all right, G, can I go back to shortstop? Because again, like I knew what I wanted to do and I kind of knew how I was going to do it. And throughout, you know, freshman year, got off to a great start. We're down in Tulane, so, which kind of gave me some confidence. You know, again, I was in a very fortunate situation where a lot of kids don't, where I kind of walked on campus, played shortstop, and I hit third as a freshman, which is kind of, you know, I don't want to say unheard of, but
pretty much unheard of.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Again, I had coaches that believed in me, you know, and that was that's such a confidence boost where you walk in there and it's like, hey man, where do you want? Like, you're going to play short, you're going to hit third. So what else, you know, I didn't really have much else to do except to play. And again, we go to freshman year. I end up hitting like over 300, 330 or something like that. And the sophomore year was when I really realized like, hey man, you're going to have to, again, stand out in other ways. So again, I hit 330 with one home run with still, you know, boy muscle on me. I was 18, you know, and then sophomore year was when Sacred Heart as a university as well took a lot of money into the strength and conditioning program. And that kind of lit something, you know, lit a light bulb in my head, like, hey man, this is here for you. Let's put on some weight. Let's put on some muscle. So again, the first year or my freshman year, I hit, I think 330 or something like that with one homer. And then the next year I hit 300, I think, with 9 or 10 homers. So again, that coming from a smaller school and undersized, if, you know, I was like, hey, this is another tool in my toolbox where, oh, you know, this kid's has a little bit of pop at this size, can play shortstop. And again, back to, you know, Sacred Heart, not having a field, it was tough. Like we were, you know how it was, like we were all over Connecticut trying to find a practice field.
Basically.
Do you know how easy that is for us, especially in college, to just sit there and complain about it? You're playing Bryant four times a year who, when you go to their field, they have it right on campus. They have students chanting, you know, out in the outfield, like, you know how easy it is to just to pack it up and be like, right, we know it's not fair. We're not playing against, we're like, look where we're playing against. Where, you know, my sophomore year, again, I kind of took a lot of accountability into myself where the only time that we could, you've heard this story 100 times, like the only time that we could hit extra, we didn't have a facility, we didn't have anywhere to go, was in the gym. There was a drop down net where you would have to wait, and I'm not kidding, until 11 or 11:30 at night until the fencing team was done practicing, and then you can have the cage. So me and a few other guys, we would go hit at 11:30 at night because that was the only time that you could get extra work in. And again, it was, you know, as a joke, like my mom growing up, like, and my parents, like, do you think your competition cares? Do you think the scouts care that they're coming to watch you guys play? Do you think that they care and they're going to write down, oh, well, he doesn't have a field to do extra work at, so we can give him some more chances and we'll look at him? Like, no, it's like, it's just not how it works. So, again, I kind of took things into my own hands. I didn't go out as much as I did with as my other friends did, which kind of, you know, it's tough. It's a decision that you have to make, and it's all choices that you have to make. Are you going to, you know, how far are you willing to take it? Whether it's school, whether it's baseball, whether it's your friends, you know, you kind of have to prioritize. And the earlier that you figure out how to do that, I think the easier college and whatever you want to do later will be.
No, that's great advice. And it's great to hear this because I, of course, knew you as a coach. But, you know, I wasn't there at 11:30 at night hitting with you. And I wasn't there when you were saying, hey, guys, I'm not going out because I have goals after college. All right. One more question before we're going to take a little short break and then, you know, finish our topic. So you got the opportunity. Not a lot of guys in my 16 years at Sacred Heart got this opportunity to play in the Cape. What was that experience and what are your memories of playing in, you know, Cape Cod League?
I mean, I got my ass handed to me there. You know, again, that was another thing where it was like, you're going to have to figure it out. Like, I, again, looking back, I had every excuse in the book. I was like, oh, it's hard to see. You know, these guys are just throwing as hard as they can, this, that, and the other. But I mean, again, I wasn't good back then, you know, like, and that kind of carried into the next year at Sacred Heart. But the Cape was such an unbelievable experience where I don't want to say I took it for granted, but I didn't appreciate as much as I should have where I was, how I was doing it. Like, again, I was rooming with a kid from Cal or UCLA where I thought that they were like the coolest people. Like, I was like, oh my God, you get custom batting gloves. Like, you get this. And then you see they have stuff at the fields, like who played on these teams. And, you know, right. Chris Bryant played third base there. You know, Mark Teixeira played for Orleans. Like, you just look at all these guys who were drafted and who went on to play in the big leagues there. It's crazy that, and no matter how I was playing, like, it's still to have your name on those teams, to have your names on those, the ones that say, oh, drafted by in 2016. Like, that's pretty cool no matter how you look at it. And again, to hit that poorly and to play that poorly and still get drafted was even more of an accomplishment for me.
Yeah, that's a great – and I remember going to see you up in Chatham and just that whole experience. And I'm sure many listeners have, you know, witnessed the Cape Cod League. It's kind of the most pure form of baseball and, you know, produced many major leaguers. And now they can claim that you, you know, are one of those people as well. But all right, we'll take a short break and we'll be right back with my talk with Zach Short.
Introducing ProBatter, the future of baseball training. With the PX3, you can practice like you play. There is a better way to train your athletes. With an easy-to-use touchscreen controller, you can program any pitch, any speed, at any location. The ProBatter Simulator is designed to replicate real game, real-world pitching. Better practice, better play. Hit any spot inside or outside the strike zone. The PX3 features reliable mechanics and an optional automatic ball feeder system. Get the most from practice. In addition to baseball, the PX3 is perfect for softball. With the PX3, no more relying on practice pitchers or basic pitching machines. Better practice, better play. ProBatter. Train like it's game day. Step up to the plate with confidence.
All right, we're back with Zach Short. We left off talking a little bit about his time at Sacred Heart. We talked about a little bit of his Cape Cod experience. You could touch on the draft experience if you want, but if you could also, you know, life in the minors. What was your experience like now playing after college, being in the minor leagues? You know, what was that whole new experience like at that point?
Yeah. So, I mean, the draft was tough because I didn't play particularly well the summer before, which is in the Cape. And then it kind of dragged over into, you know, Sacred Heart season where I had the worst year. And I don't know if that was pressure that I put on myself of getting drafted, of trying to be Superman, you know, every game where I was just trying to do way too much. But yeah, ended up getting drafted still in the 17th round by the Cubs, which was great, you know. The Cubs were one of the first teams to really show interest in me. They're like one of the first meetings that I had with a team. So for them to kind of stick with me throughout that whole, you know, tough year was, it meant a lot. So again, you know, got drafted, go there to Arizona and play in rookie ball where it, I mean, it's an eye-opening experience. It is, you're playing with guys who don't care where you're from. They don't care how much you sign for. They don't speak the same language as you. It's hard because it's such like a different team aspect where, you know, you're going from college, you're playing with your best friends that you just want to win every single game. And again, you do want to win every single game. That's not how, it's not what I'm saying, but you go there and it completely turns into a dog eat dog world. But you're also, you have to be a good teammate. You have to be a good person or it's going to be a tough road for you unless you hit 400.
All right.
So again, you know, you're watching and you're playing with guys. The goal for everybody there is to move up as quickly as you can. And pro ball, again, you have to almost put on a mask where it's like, all right, like obviously I want everybody around me to do well, but I want myself to do the best. So you're rotating in with guys, you know, you still have to, you know, put on that face of like, yeah, I'm happy for the guy who I'm competing with because you are. You truly are happy for him. He's chasing his dreams. You're chasing yours. But at the end of the day, it's your own career. You have to take ownership of it. So, again, putting in the extra work and knowing kind of what kind of player I wanted to be, again, my glove still wasn't there. So you don't look on TV and see many, you know, American infielders in the middle of the infield, you know, playing at the highest level. So again, I looked myself in the mirror and said, hey, you're going to have to figure out how to, if you're going to play in the middle of the field, you're going to have to be better than those guys who look completely different than you do, you know?
Right.
So you're playing, you know, the Latin American guys who are 16, 17, 18 years old when they come over and just at an unbelievably high level doing it. It's like, how am I going to stick out? And, you know, watching all of the videos, you know, watching the preparation that these guys do, you build a routine and it again, it's such a completely different atmosphere than college and high school is. And I give so much credit to those high schoolers who come out of the draft
right.
From high school. It's the first time you're living on your own. Like I said, you're playing with guys who don't give a care in the world about you as a person. They're trying to take your money. They're trying to take food off your table. It truly is a dog eat dog world. And, you know, you're on a bus ride for 12 hours. You get in at 4 or 5 in the morning. You have to go play again that night. It's tough. I was clearing $200 every other week in the minor leagues in short season. Like, it's insane. It was so almost inhumane. But again, you're chasing your dreams. Everyone's like, oh, well, you don't have to do that. But it's kind of hard to not, you know, just look at it and be like, this is legitimately inhumane. You're staying at hotels with bed bugs in them and all for to get a shot to play at the next level. It's crazy. It really is such a different world when you get there and you're coming from playing with your best friends. But the more fun that you can make it and not treat it as a job, the more fun and more success you're going to have.
So not to sidetrack, this is not something I plan to ask, but is it under your, you know, are you aware that or have heard that since what the, you know, Major League Baseball has done with the minor leagues has improved the conditions for the majority of people significantly?
Significantly, like housing, yeah. Again, so we were in, you know, high A and double A when you have to find your own housing, like you're paying, you know, $800 a month, whatever it is, and you're basically losing money. It's like a
right.
Between rent, between food you have to pay because you're getting, you know, the Cubs, I will say the Cubs were great about the nutrition, about everything. Like they were one of the first teams to put so much money into their, you know, they had nutritionists at the field. They had, you know, even the snacks, like you had the little snacks everybody wants, but I mean, they knew how it was. And now, I mean, again, you have a 6-game series. You have every Monday off. You're not staying at the horrendous hotels. You know, you're getting paid a much, I don't know, I don't want to say loose term of a more fair pay. But, I mean, with how much time you spend at the field, with how much time you spend in spring training and the conditions and the pay that you were getting back in the day compared to what it is now was just night and day. I mean, again, housing is free now. The food is way better. You're getting more pay during the season. And it was kind of something that when we were playing there, it was just like, yeah, like it's part of it, man. You got to just wear it. If you want to do it, great. If you don't, totally understandable. But
right.
And it's funny now, like you're not taking like, and when we were in AAA, you'd play 3 or 4 game series. You know, we were in Iowa in the Pacific Coast League, which is, you know, think of Iowa, it's not in the Pacific Coast whatsoever. And you're flying every fourth day, basically. So you play that, you know, you play a 7 o'clock game. You have the next day you're flying out at 6 a.m. The bus picks you up from the hotel at 3:30. You get in at noon, 1 o'clock. You sleep an extra 2 hours when you get to your apartment or to the hotel. And then you have to go and play at 7 o'clock, all while making at that point, you know, $800 every 2 weeks. And again, I'm not complaining about pay or anything, but it was,
it's a grind.
It was a grind. And now it is just a way better situation. Like I said, you're traveling either every Monday, you get to play golf. If you're off, you can, you know, if you're playing in a closer, a team that's closer, you drive Tuesday morning before the game on sleeper buses. I mean, again, it was a long time coming, but when we were in the minor leagues, you didn't think anything of it. It was just like, man, how great is that going to be when you get to that, to the big leagues, or when you get to AAA and you're like, man, this is great.
Right. Exactly. So on that note, you know, what is your, you know, can you tell us about the experience of, you know, actually becoming a big leaguer, getting the call and the first, you know, moment of realizing that dream?
Yeah. It was weird because when I got called up in 21, beginning of 21. So COVID was still a hangover, basically. Like there was, you know, there wasn't many fans in the stands. And everything was just weird. Like you had basically two locker rooms. It wasn't what I expected, obviously, but you know, the first day I get called up and I saw Miguel Cabrera in spring training when I got traded the year before.
Right.
And the first time I saw Miggy was in the spring of 21. So I was, you know, he walks by me. I'm like, I mean, this is outrageous. and I spent a few spring trainings with the Cubs when they had, you know, Chris Bryant, Schwarber, Rizzo, all of these guys. But when Miggy walks by, the room kind of just stops and it's like, oh my God, that's Miggy, you know? So I think that was the first time where I was just like, I mean, I'm in the same locker room. I'm on the same team as Miguel Cabrera. And that was like kind of like a pinch me moment. And then, you know, I went, I think 0-for-1, my first game with two walks. And it's so hard to feel comfortable because, you know, the next game that I played, I'm walking to the plate and I say hi to Salvador Perez, who's catching. And it's so hard to not step out and be like, what is going on? As you're trying to get a sign, as you're trying to, you know, you're facing an all-star, you're just like, all right. So I wish, again, I appreciated it more back then. But looking back, you know, I think I did a pretty good job of, you know, when I got there, was taking it all in, you know, looking who's around you. You know, you're sharing, like I said, you're sharing a dugout with Miguel Cabrera. You look over, Salvador Perez is catching. You know, you're facing Mike Minor, who was an all-star. You get your first hit off of an all-star Mike Minor. Like, it's pretty cool. But it's also tough. Like, again, you know, my rookie year, I was horrible. I hit like 140. And it's hard because everybody dreams of being and playing in the big leagues, but nobody dreams of not playing well in the big leagues. So, you know, everybody's like, oh man, just enjoy it. You know, have fun. You're doing this, you're doing that. And it's like, okay, when you're playing, you're throwing a wiffle ball up to yourself in your backyard, it's like, all right, 3-2, bases loaded. Oh, and he swings and misses. Like, that's not how it is.
Right.
So that was such like a tough pill to swallow for me. So again, like I didn't play well. I didn't want those big at bats where, you know, you have a chance to, I'm sorry, my dog just ripped open. you have a chance to win a game, but at the end of the day, like you feel horrible in the box and you don't know what's going on. Everything just kind of speeds up on you. So, you know, I was like, all right, you know, I'll get them next year. And the next year, as in last year, I spend, you know, 10 or 14 days up there. I went 0-for-10. You know, I didn't get another at bat or I didn't get a hit that year. And I'm like, am I ever going to, you know, play again in the big leagues? And then goes to this year where again, I got optioned late out of camp. I had a decent spring training, thought I had a chance to make the team, didn't. Again, it was another gut punch where you're like, here we go, back to AAA. I feel like you're the mayor of Toledo, where AAA was. And I get called up on a doubleheader where, you know, you get an extra man in the big leagues. And it's weird to say, but I wanted nothing to do with going up and getting called up that day. I was hitting like 190 something with a few homers in the first month of AAA. And I'm like, I'm going up there and I'm going to, you know, I don't know what I'm doing up there. And I'm going up and facing the Orioles, who are nasty. You know, like, why me? Like, why am I getting called up? There's nobody else. And it felt like, but again, I kind of had an aha moment where I was like, hey man, like, what if this day changes your life? You know? And it did. Like, I go that day, I go 3-for-4 with a homer, make a few diving plays in the infield, which, you know, a few to happen in a game is kind of like, you know, if you make a nice play, it's like, oh man, that was sick. But like, I think I dove 2 or 3 times, and it was kind of just like everything went right that day. And from that day, you know, they told me, hey, you know, usually when you're a doubleheader or when you get called up for a doubleheader, it's, hey, thanks for today. You're going back down. It's like, all right, great. You know, they tell me like, hey, you're gonna stay. We don't know how long you're gonna stay, but what you did today was just like, you know, it earns you a spot. So again, and I ended up staying up the whole year for that. For after that day, I stayed up the rest of the year in the big leagues. And again, if you would have told me the day before, if you would have told me that morning, like, hey man, guess what? This is what you're gonna do today, I would have said you're crazy. And it just goes to show, like, you never know what can happen. And it just, it's such an interesting game. It's such a, you know, I want to say a stupid game, but it is. It's, you know, you feel absolutely horrible. Then you go into the highest level in the world and you get 3 hits, you hit a homer, win a day, and you felt horrible the whole month in a league lower, which is in AAA. It's right. It's just insane. But, you know, learning how to become a major leaguer, learning how to do your routine, following guys, you know, talking to guys, watching what other greats do who are playing right now, like, that's all a part of it. And that's what I really try to do every day, is just learn one thing from somebody. And that's at any level. You know, right. If me and you were talking about something, I can learn a lot from you, whether it's, you know, mental stuff or how to approach something. But it doesn't matter, even if you'd never played in the big leagues before. So, right. You know, and that's all part of growing up, no matter what level you're at. But to have the chance to do it at the highest level and learn from guys, it's just something that, you know, I'll never get over.
Yeah, I mean, one of the themes throughout your time, your development, I knew this, but again, on this talk, is you got to become your own best coach, right? You're taking information from all the people, but sometimes it won't work for you, and you got to find your routine. You got to find what works for you, and that's in every capacity, probably from sleep to when to eat properly before the game, when to take extra reps, extra swings, all of that stuff. It's so much that you have to really self-coach, and it's probably never going to stop. It's always a work in progress.
100%. And I had a conversation with somebody last night who I'm going to be working out with, where it was like, hey, I'm kind of done, you know, making my swing or my routine somebody else's. Like, again, I know how my body works. Like, I can't move like that person over there and put my body in those positions, where that was tough, because, you know, you see all of these great guys getting in a certain position, and it's like, okay, but then there's also great guys who have a body similar to yours, where it's like, again, I can't hang way back and hit like somebody else, where I'm right. Like, hey, so I, you know, I was telling the guy, like, hey, I'm going to do what the video is telling me, and I'm going to work within my body and like my movement pattern. And again, that is all part of learning it, because years ago I'd be like, no, I'm going to do this because he's doing this, which again, all bits and pieces, all asking questions and learning from certain people. And you take kind of what you can understand and what you can grasp, and then you kind of throw out, like, again, if I don't like something that you say, if it doesn't resonate with me, I'm like, okay, I hear you, but I don't know if I can apply that to myself.
Yeah, you don't want to be too coachable, because then you're always tinkering and tweaking and you never have your own thing. You listen and you try, and if it works, great. And if not, it doesn't.
That really quick, that is something in pro ball. Like, again, everybody wants their hands on you for the most part. And it's so hard to, you know, because you want to be coachable. you want to be like that, like, oh yeah, we offered him some information, he took it. But at the same time, if it doesn't sit right with you, you kind of have to just be respectful and just be like, yep, like, you know, just basically smile and wave, be like, all right, I get it, thank you, like, yeah, I totally understand it. But at the end of the day, if it's, because if you play well and if you do well, nothing of that is going to come up.
Right, exactly. All right, kind of have like three more topics to go over. The first is kind of what's the life for you in the off season? Has it changed from when there was a minor league off season to a major league off season? What's the themes of the off season for Zach Short?
Yeah, it used to be a little bit different, especially when you had a job basically guaranteed. You know, in the minor leagues, they're not going to get rid of you right away. But now it's tough because the business aspect of baseball kind of comes into play the higher you get. And this is, you know, I don't know where I'm going to be. I don't know what's going to happen within the next few weeks. So it's kind of tough to not worry about the things that you can't control, as cliche as it is. But, you know, baseball aspect and body aspect, you know, I took a week off from doing just nothing. You know, I hung out with some friends, played some golf. But then I kind of got back into working out, you know, in there three times a week. And this year I'm going to start, I don't want to say hitting a little bit earlier, but I'm going to, you know, tackle the little things of hitting and throwing and fielding a little bit earlier than I have in the past. Again, like I would just get in there, hit BP, hit machine, you know, in November. And it's like, that's not really doing a lot for you, especially for me. Like I kind of have to have a little bit of an overhaul with my swing, not overhaul, but really figure out how I move, really figure out what's going to sit right with me and, you know, learn what I want to do as a hitter. And again, as I want to move. So, you know, the first month or two, I'm going to take it slow. I'm going to do a lot of one hand stuff. I'm going to learn, you know, how to put myself in certain positions to see if it works instead of just getting up there in November and hitting off a machine, because that does no good for you.
Right.
And I want to be able to get a little bit vulnerable in the cage where everything's not going to go right, but you're going to learn from it. Where in the past, I remember telling you, like, I want to feel good all off season. And again, there's a time and a place for that. 100%. Right. You need those dig me days. You need those let me feel good days. But there's some days where you have to challenge yourself. And if you're kind of feeling comfortable all off season, unless you really, really know what you're doing, I don't think it's going to be a successful off season. Like, again, I can't do that anymore. That's a part of like what we just said. It's a part of learning who you are. It's a part of learning your routine. So again, this year I'm going to do a little bit different, and I'm kind of, you know, I'm going to get in and solidify some movements a little bit. And you know, last year was the first year where I've thrown a lot more frequently in the off season. And this was my best my arm has ever felt. And right. I have some arm issues, but you know, to work through those and to figure out what I need to do to make it feel good for 162 games. And I think I found a recipe. Again, that is all part of, you know, going and again, having a luxury to do that, where I've played for almost 7 years now, 7 or 8 years now professionally, like, or 6 years now professionally, like, you learn a lot about it. And again, this year it's going to be a little bit different, but also taking some information that I've had in the past off seasons.
Yeah. Okay. That's great. While you were talking about all that stuff, I wanted to make sure I asked you about this. This is common for the group that we run in, but there'll be people here that are kind of just, you know, seeing Zach Short for the first time. And talk a little bit about Jason Foley, who your classmate at Sacred Heart, get signed as a free agent, and now you guys are teammates on the Tigers. I mean, it's fairly insane that two guys from a small college that's only had three big leaguers ever, that the two guys are in the same class currently on the same team. So just, you know, if you could, Foles, you know, I of course know well, he's a great guy, but it's got to be wild to be on the same team together.
It is absolutely insane. This has been a year, because again, this is the longest that we've played together consecutively, but we will say it kind of once a week almost, or like our group message will be like, I mean, this is absolutely insane, you know. You know, Foles has completely turned himself into baseball, like one of baseball's best and most like dominant relievers. Watching him you know, come into campus, you could see, I mean, he was raw. You know how, like, again, anybody, you know, he was throwing 88 to 90 and as a freshman, basically having no clue what he was doing. And to see how he's progressed, you know, even regressed, not getting drafted. He was supposed to be like a top 10 rounder pick, throwing really, really hard. And then his draft year, our draft year, not playing well, not throwing well, getting surgery in minor leagues when he was signed after he had a really, really dominant year again. It was tough, you know, and he kind of stalled there for a little bit with his development. You know, I think in 18, he was still throwing 18 and 19. He was throwing four seams because that was kind of the hot topic. Whereas, right. Like, oh, you throw really hard, you're going to have to throw four seams at the top of the zone. And I remember having a conversation with him. He's like, dude, I have no idea why I'm getting hit. I'm throwing 98 to 101 at the top of the zone with my four seam like I'm supposed to. And I'm getting hammered. And I think in 19 or 20 before COVID hit, he messed around with a sinker. And again, when I say it completely changed his life, it changed everything that he does. He, again, got a shot in 21, did fine. Last year, I think, spent the whole year up, did fine. And then this year completely turned a corner where he's throwing leverage innings. He's throwing when we're up 1, 2, or 3, starting in the 7th, 8th, and 9th inning, mixing in some saves. That guy, I mean, to see how far that he has come, not even just physically, but mentally, you know how he was, you know.
Yes.
Just like, again, I'm not saying that I am, you know, Gandhi, but with like a perfect mind, but I mean, he was kind of all over the place. And to see him throw, like I said, in leverage innings, and to watch him do it as on the same field. And again, if you would have told us, if you would have told anybody, like, hey, down the road, you guys are going to play a few years together in the big leagues and on the same team, you would have been like, dude, this is the stupidest movie that you could ever make.
Right.
This is so cheesy. And there's a few times a week where we're just sitting there. We're just like, this is unbelievable, dude. Like, and again, to watch him have the success that he did this year and moving forward where he's going to be in the league for as long as he wants, you know, health and everything, knock on wood. But I mean,
yeah,
he's special, man. And it truly is such an unbelievable experience to play together and just to get such a front row seat to watch what he's doing and what he has been doing.
That's great. I mean, you're right. He's, you know, he'll hopefully be a future guest on this. And, you know, while you've evolved in a lot of ways, I mean, he's really, really evolved physically, mentally, skill-wise, et cetera. He's a great story. All right. I think what will be our last topic is the Compound. So the podcast that you are involved in, which has been quite a while now. So if you don't mind, tell us a little bit how that came about and then kind of what it is at this point and maybe what it'll be going forward.
Yeah, I mean, that the it's crazy. I as bad as, you know, COVID was, I mean, obviously, like, I was very lucky during this time where we were in spring training and everything gets shut down, and Ian Happ of the Cubs, you know, all-star outfielder, and Dakota Mekis, he was a guy that I played with coming up, I'm still really close with. We got basically invited to stay at this house that he stays at every spring training. When everything got shut down, we kind of were like, hey, Ian, like, are you going home? Like, what are you doing? He's like, no, I'm going to stay here because, you know, back then it was only supposed to be like 2 weeks shut down. And then,
right.
So we're like, hey, like, do you think that, you know, we could kind of crash with you? He's like, yeah, let me ask. And he did. All good. Got the clear. And he was like, but the only way that you guys can stay here is if we start a podcast. And we were like, bro, what? Like, nobody wants to hear two minor leaguers. And he's like, dude, I'm telling you, like, Cubs fans are worldwide, nationwide, like basically worldwide. But, you know, there nothing is going on sports wise. We would be like the only people doing this. He's like, just trust me, just do it. And we're like, all right, whatever. You know, he's networked with, he knows so many people. We can get so many cool guests on. And it was funny, you know, it turned out to be like twice or three times a week, which we were just like, I mean, this is ridiculous. This is a lot. This is also why we were staying in Arizona at this house. So we had a lot more free time.
Right.
But so when everything got back to normal, we were kind of like, hey, you know, what are we doing? Like, are we going to stop this? Like, what do we got? And it turned into I think last night we recorded and it was our 180th episode, which is just like, nobody in a million years would have thought this, saw this happening. And it's been cool. There's been nights, obviously, where, you know, it's really tough to get three people on the same schedule who are all over the country. But there are some really, really cool conversations that we've had with people. We've had, you know, guys from every sport come on. And again, like, just hearing and listening to athletes' processes on how they do everything, you know, actors we've had on, it's such an, you don't get many experiences like that to talk to somebody and to do it for, you know, you're basically, it turned into like a conversation now where it's just like, yeah, we'll go talk for an hour and everything will kind of just flow and we'll do it again next week. But the support that we've gotten, and you know, you go on the road when I'm up in the big leagues and you hear guys, like, you're on deck and it's like, Zach, I love your podcast. It's just like, what a world. This is unbelievable. You know, yeah, I mean, we record once a week. John Boy has us. They do a great job promoting us. They do a great job of editing. And again, it's been almost funny and laughable that it's turned into 180 episodes for this long.
Yeah. I mean, I assume it'll keep on rolling and it'll kind of keep its same format and
keep going. I mean, exactly. It's tough. Again, it does get a little hairy when we're sitting there and it's like, dude, I can't stay up till 1 a.m. and record when I have a day game tomorrow. Like, I'm sorry, I can't do it, you know, and it's tough. But again, when conversations just flow and you're getting a lot, again, Ian is he's an all-star, he's a gold glover. And just to hear his process on things, it's selfishly like, I look forward to it and I'll ask him some tough questions and I want to get it out of him. But it's cool because as an athlete, like, I love the behind the scenes of any, like, if there's a mic'd up in any sport, like, I'm watching it and I know that everybody else loves it. So the more that you can kind of get those conversations of like, let's get really behind the scenes, like, people love it. They eat it up, as I do too. Like, when we have guests on, I'm like, all right, I want to ask him about this and see if he'll answer it. Because,
right,
I mean, again, you're watching football and you see those mic'd up behind your Hard Knocks. Like, that is awesome stuff. So again, we've come a long way, but as much as, you know, we'll complain about the scheduling and stuff, it's been a really fun ride.
Who, you know, I don't know if you can answer this. Who has been your favorite person you've had on?
Baseball wise, Joey Votto was a really, really good guest. There was a bunch early, like 2 years ago, where I don't remember, but like, I mean, you know, John Lester coming on talking about his success. I mean, again, we had Josh Donaldson on. He could, this was 2 years ago, he could have still been, has been talking. Like, he was so in depth about what he, and it was so much fun just to kind of sit and listen to. And again, it's cool. I mean, any athlete that you can get on, or any, you know, anybody from, you know, we have golfers on, it's cool to listen to just everybody else's thoughts and what they do behind the scenes.
Yeah. And it's just great that you guys made use of the COVID time and it was perfect situation too. But all right, Zach, that was a blast hearing everything. I mean, I learned some new stuff, which was cool because I think I know you pretty well, but that's nice about having these conversations. So we appreciate it. I appreciate it. Pro Batter appreciates it. And we look forward to, you know, getting this episode out to everybody and our future guests as well. So thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. I really appreciate it.
And that concludes today's episode of And That's the Game podcast, sponsored by Pro Batter Sports. Again, I'm your host, Wayne Mazzoni, and I hope you enjoyed today's episode with Major League infielder Zach Short of the Detroit Tigers.
For more information about Pro Batter Sports, visit them on the web at probatter.com. I'm ready.